Well, welcome to the last of our four calls. And there's still going to be people coming on. We hear the chime whenever they get on. But I thought I'd get started. And instead of going in order of how they appeared, I may go backwards, in backwards order. So I want to talk to Jason your question first. How's that sound, even though you just sent it about an hour ago? Feel like being in the hot seat?
My voice of resistance is telling me no, but I will acknowledge that and quieten the voice of resistance down and just attach to the voice of bravery and say yes.
Okay.
I'm going to shift in my chair and speaking to the voice of bravery.
Okay. And bravery is somebody that's...
I'm on the computer. I'm not on the house.
So bravery is somebody that's willing to do something scary. Courage. Similar. And, you know, why don't, while we're waiting for a few more people to get on, let me just kind of address and acknowledge that that is amazing. And probably the biggest challenge with my work and what I'm trying to do here is that, you know, prior to my book coming out, I had a different kind of clientele. I mostly had athletes, skiers. Now I'm dealing with kind of down in the dirt, real world problems, PTSD, anxiety disorders, just a lot of fear-based problems. And I find that a lot of people that come to work with me, they're not willing to do the work. And I just want to acknowledge that those of you that are on this call and Jason, you saying, okay, I'm willing to look at, I mean, nobody knows what the question is yet. I do know what the question is. It's a big one. It's a scary one. And, you know, I just want to acknowledge that the people in this group are so willing to do this dirty work, this looking at your shadow work. And it is for warriors only. It is for courageous people. And it's so much easier to just check out and, you know, it seems like it should be easier, but like when somebody has severe insomnia or is having panic attacks and then I hear them say, oh, well, I'm not willing to do a 2 minute a day process in order to feel better, you know, and I'm checking out on that and you'd think that it would be rare. But it's not. It's more common than you think. And from where I'm sitting, it's like so few people are willing to do this work. So thank you. Let's get started.
I will confess that I am the person who doesn't do the work every day. I will go to Staples and buy all the supplies that I need, but I won't actually use them. And similarly with this course, I was not able to attend last week, but I listened to the lecture or to the conference call, and I've been on the call, but I haven't done the practice.
And I think that everybody can relate to that. It's like, okay, sometimes we buy the book and then we don't read it. Sometimes we skip the webinar, and other times we attend the webinar. It's forgivable. You know, it's not like your life is in danger or your life is on the line. You know, I find that people won't change unless they have to. And I see you, Jason, as somebody that has discomfort and it's not a big enough problem that you really have to do something about it. It's just that you want to do something about it. You know, there are people that I work with that have to do something about it. And when these people bail, you know, that's surprising. So when people that are not struggling too bad show up, that's enlightening and enriching and gorgeous. So everybody give yourselves pats on the back because I don't see any one person in this support call. call package that is in crisis. You know, I just see a group of people that are just looking to be the best they possibly can be. So congratulations. You guys are warriors. Okay. Anybody have anything that they want to say about that? Because that's just something that's really been on my mind. I just recently had a client that just said, no, I refuse to do this work. And so it's front and center in my mind, but does anybody else have any comments or questions about what I just said?
Peter here. I guess it made me think about the question I asked, and, you know, if you're planning on addressing it later, that's cool. I just was wondering if sort of I'm kind of creating some intensity around, you know, the decisions I need to make, you know, almost like ramping it up to make it a little bit more of a mini crisis for myself, you know, because I could see just sort of having it be easier on myself if I didn't sort of force myself.
Right, and I think we all do that. It's like, okay, we have a bit of a problem. Well, I'm going to turn up the knob on this. Like, let's say you're not getting along with your spouse, and you pick a huge fight because you want to make it a bigger issue. It's totally unconscious, right? Because you want to make it a bigger issue and catastrophize it so that something changes. Because it's just nagging just a little bit, you know, and you want to have it nag a lot so that you look at it. And I think that there's some wisdom to that, you know, as awful and creepy as it sounds. I think that that's a mechanism that is built into us that seems pathological, but really actually has some sort of wisdom to it. Like an example in my own life is, you know, my husband and I have had kind of a slow drip of a problem for 8 years. And then book comes out, he quits his job to help me with the work. And next thing you know, the volume on that gets so amplified that we have to do something about it. And as you know, traumatic as it's been to get to this point, you know, it's a potential relationship ending situation now. We have to look at it. And if we hadn't gone through the crisis of the last year of being overworked and exhausted and on edge, and I'm going through menopause and all of that, then we would have had a slow drip for 30, 40 years, and then we'd die, and it's like we'd never have the relationship of our dreams. And so now it's forcing us to either shit or get off the pot, like do the work and solve this slow drip that's now become a explosion, you know, like a fire hydrant that's out of control. Solve this problem and get it so that there's no more leakage and so that we can ultimately have the relationship of our dreams or get out. I mean, it's, like I said, there's some wisdom to ramping things up. And so, Peter, that's what you're doing. Maybe that's what all of us do. Can anybody else relate?
I can't relate to that. I had my first wife was somebody who employed that strategy, but it's not one that I can relate to. Just did it myself.
So you didn't do it, but maybe she did.
Oh, yeah.
And there was somebody else that wanted to say something.
Sorry, it was Beth. I was just saying, yes, I can also relate. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think there's tons of things we just leave sort of festering in the background, and then something has to bring it to the forefront, make it a priority, or else we don't address it.
Right. It's a thing. And this is actually a good sequence into, Jason, your question, which is about pain. You know, oftentimes our body communicates in the same way. You know, it's like, okay, there's a little bit of pain, and it's not enough to go to see a doctor, you know, take an ibuprofen, no big deal. And then slowly, maybe the body just ramps it up until you like, the body's like saying, you have to pay attention to me, you know, and that goes for emotional pain too, taking it back into fear. So, you know, when the pain gets to be so great, you know, there has to be a breakdown to now deal with it. And so let's go to this question. So, Jason, my behaviors, most of my voices are to avoid feeling pain. there is no voice of pain. Oh, there is the voice of a pain and the voice of avoiding pain. You don't want to, you're saying that you don't want to give the voice of pain any oxygen for it to speak fully. How do you connect with the voice of pain? Well, there's a saying in Zen, how do you fall into a, oh, wait, let me see if I get this right. Let me change it to skiing. How do you jump off a cliff? You just do it, right? So let's just do it. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of pain. So, Jason, you're in the hot seat. Who am I
talking to? And I will connect with the voice of pain in a minute. The one thing that I didn't write, I guess, is, you know, the difference, what's the difference between pain and fear? And obviously there is, but I think, you know, I've some in the past been able to, when I've been afraid of something, that's been a sign to do it. I usually have no issue with doing pain, as you say. You know, when you come to a cliff, you jump off it. I've never had any problem jumping off cliffs. Whether they've been physical endurance or business related, I've always jumped off the cliff. I've always figured, you know, like fear has not been my problem. But lately, you know, and last week's call, which I listened to, was amazing. You know, and you talked about the bardo and the small death. You know, I've gotten to a point where the using the voice of fear hasn't been working, and I have felt, you know, that last week's conversation was incredibly illuminating in terms of the bardo, the concept of bardo, the small death, because I find myself, you know, like thoughts and feelings of wanting to, you know, I use the word die, but understanding now that it's more transcend, you know, and change, and just that I can't do what I'm doing. I just want to, you know, metaphorically kill myself in the sense of kill what I'm going through right now and emerge changed, but I can't because it requires going to listen to the voice of pain, which I can't do. So that's the context in which I wrote this email for you. And so now I will shift.
Well, hold on. Let me reflect on that for a second. And Peter's question, which will come up soon, is somewhat similar, like the part of us that wants to die so that the next part of us can be reborn. But it seems to me that you have to go into pain in order to get to the next level of your development. And my equation in the book, suffering equals discomfort times resistance, here's my dirty little secret. I stole that. You know, you hear good artists borrow, great artists steal. So specifically, I stole it from somebody that had suffering equals pain times resistance. And I changed it to discomfort. Because that person was in particular talking about physical pain, I think it was a doctor of some sort. And so discomfort, you know, there's discomfort and pain is a part of discomfort. There's many different ways to feel uncomfortable. You know, if you have loneliness, there's a pain involved in that. If you have fear, there's a pain involved in that. Now pain is, you know, it's a word that has many different meanings. And when I think of pain, I think physical pain. I think that you're more talking about emotional pain. But, you know, you go through a surgery, it's physical pain and it's emotional pain. You know, are we talking physical or emotional or both? Or can you be more specific, I guess?
Well, it's emotional pain. You know, in the lead up to this call, we just got your email regarding your PTSD course, which I think, you know, it's like I sent the email and then your PTSD email arrived, and I was like, was that intentional or accidental? No. So having listened to the introductory video, I know that that's something that I'm going to have to do. But,
okay.
You know, because
yeah,
I think letting go of the emotional pain, I feel like I'm dishonoring the part of me that experienced it.
Okay.
And I...
Well, let's...
But yes.
Let's get to this. Knowing that we're using the word pain loosely, and it's going to have a different meaning for different people, but ultimately, when we think of pain, it's a physical experience. And mm-hmm. So I really want us to kind of be soft in our words, because some conversations are hard to navigate through words alone. And so when I ask to speak to this voice, I just want everybody, when I say, who am I speaking to, instead of saying the word pain, I want you to give it a noise. Because I mentioned this before in another talk where, you know, you jump into the ocean in Antarctica in wintertime and you jump out and the word, oh, I feel cold, that doesn't capture it. It's, ah, you know. And so let's just use sounds to just explain what we are, just so that we're not limited by the word pain. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of pain. Who am I speaking to? And I'm going to answer this. I'm, who am I speaking to? And Jason, you can be in the hot seat, and everybody else can also make that noise on mute if you want, or out loud. Who am I speaking to? And Jason, I want to hear your voice, though. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, Kristen. This is the voice of... Ah!
Okay. So notice yours is more kind of hyper, high-pitched. Mine was more low and just, like, guttural. And so for everybody, you're going to show up different. And... you know, oftentimes what you are is the voice of resistance, believe it or not, too. So just kind of notice whatever you notice. And just notice the self's relationship with you. You know, is the self trying to let go of you? Is the self ignoring you? Is the self avoiding you? Is the self trying to replace you with calm or, you know? Does the self see you as a personal weakness or the problem? I mean, there's the problem in the world that causes you, and then there's just you yourself. So I want everybody to just notice that now. So there's the voice of pain, and then there's the voice of avoiding pain, the voice of avoiding you. And the question is Jason strong enough to allow you any oxygen? You know, is the self willing to breathe into you, give you some oxygen? And you can answer that question.
Well, usually I don't get any oxygen. And I know that there are many components to that noise that I, you know, identified myself as, and maybe some of those elements that are me, you get a little bit of oxygen sometimes, but mostly, you know, I'm not allowed to breathe at all.
So these are the four stages of dealing with you, and it's the same with fear. Some people ignore you, avoid you, you know, all the things that I already outlined. And whatever you resist persists, you know, suffering equals pain times resistance. Like there's resistance to you. That's the first level. The second level is we accept you. You know, you're part of life. You break your leg, you're going to show up, right? You go through a difficult emotional problem, you know, some trauma or something, you're going to show up. Like accepting that you're normal and natural, not a sign of personal weakness, that's a step in the right direction. But we're still in our heads about you. And Jason's question was, how do I connect with the voice of pain? There's not really a connection in these first two steps, you know, resist it, accept it. That's not a connection. It kind of reeks of like, okay, I accept that you're here. There's nothing I can do about it. It is what it is, right? That's not connecting to it. That's not giving the pain oxygen and allowing it to speak fully. The next two are, though. The third level is where you feel you, where Jason learns how to feel you in an honest way. But there's still separation between you and Jason. Jason feeling you, the subject object. So there's no connection. And then the fourth level is where he learns how to be intimate with you. And there is no separation. It's like he can feel you and you can feel him feeling you and he can feel you feeling him back. And, you know, there's like this dance, like really gorgeous lovers. And I believe when people get tattoos, for example, and if they're really addicted to the tattoo, they get to that intimate stage where they're just feeling you. They become one with you. There's no separation. And you do a dance in this gorgeous kind of like lovers. It takes them in, you know, the person into a higher state. So those are the four different levels. So right now, let's just go back to Jason. Allow me please to speak to the voice of Jason. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, Kristen. This is Jason.
Okay.
The voice of Jason.
So how do you connect with this voice? I think just allowing it to speak just now was start. You know, we want to go for the third or the fourth level. So let's just collectively, all of us, just notice this voice inside of us, this, whatever your version was. And I just want you to spend just, let's say 40 seconds, just feeling the pain, subject, object. I'm not it, it's not me, but I can locate it in my body and now I'm feeling it. And let's do this in silence. And if you want to give it some oxygen, please do. And the question is, does everyone feel strong enough to do this? And that question is for anybody to answer. Does this feel hard for anybody?
Am I still in the hot seat?
Not necessarily. But if you have something that you want to say, please do. And knowing that we only have a few minutes left before we need to move on.
Okay, sure.
So then how do you connect with the voice of pain? Well, this is it. Did you have something that you wanted to say, or shall we go to the fourth level?
I muted my microphone, but I spent that 30 or 40 seconds just crying, which is something that I don't do, and I think if I was to shift into the voice of pain, I'd say that this was the first time that Jason felt me in 40 years, in 50 years.
That would bring tears to anybody's eyes, including my own. Let's take it one step further. So clearly he is strong enough to jump off this cliff. And so now...
But yeah, shifting back to Jason, that makes me feel weak to feel that.
Oh. It takes a strong man to be able to cry. It takes a strong man to embrace his weakness. It's a reframe. And I'm kind of all about right now, instead of ending a behavior, which sets us up for failure, I'm all about starting a new behavior. So if you try to end a behavior, which is avoiding your pain, then if you keep doing it, then you feel like a failure, 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 right? But if you just start a new practice, like you commit to doing something new or different, every time you do it, you feel like like you've succeeded. And so instead of feeling like a failure moving on, that, oh my gosh, I go back to old ways and I'm trying to stop avoiding pain, why don't you just start a pain practice and just as much as you can, just feel it like you just did. And then the next step, of course, be intimate with it, you know, and every time you do it, even if you only do it for just a brief moment, where you allow yourself to just go, oh, or make that noise that you made, or maybe sob a little bit, that's a success. And it's tapping you into essential vulnerability, which a lot of men really have a hard time tapping into. And there's these things called mandalas, these artist depiction of either a community or a person. And the center of a mandala is always vulnerability. It's like the center of our being. So every time you are willing to make that noise or have the moment that we just had, it's you tapping into the center of your being. And so instead of trying to end repression, you know, start a new practice where you actually feel it and maybe become intimate with it, and then you'll only have successes and won't feel like you've had more failures. Do you follow?
Yes, I do. And I have, I think, 2 mandalas hanging in different parts of the house and from our travels in Nepal, and I will take those words and stand in front of them and think about that.
And then let's go the extra step. All of us, let's do this together. Let's just, and you don't need to know what this means. You know, just go with the flavor of the words. We're limited by words. You know, it's like great lovers. Like you can't really, maybe Rumi and Hafiz can use words to describe the high and fine art of being a great lover, but let's just now have 40 seconds of being intimate with our pain. So there's no more subject-object. It's like you feel the pain, and you feel the pain feeling you back. So 40 seconds. And let me hear from one other person now and just tell me what that was like for you. maybe I'll go. What it was like for me was it was really beautiful. And it made me feel like I was really tapping into something that's been trying to get my attention for a while. And it was not in my mind. It was started off as, because the sun is kind of shining through the windows, and I closed my eyes and it was a bright light, and I just kind of felt like the light got stronger, and then it just started to dissolve. And anyway, it was really probably that little moment was probably the highlight of my day. So I'd like to move on because we have a lot to get to. I mean, it would be really interesting to just do a whole session on this because it's, you know, a significant subject. But let's move on. Glenda had a very humbling week. She had a fear practice, wrote in her journal every time she felt the discomfort, wrote all her fears, and it was amazing, she said, how calm I felt after. I did it at least 3 times this week, and the things I wrote kind of blew her mind. I realized I was more fearful than I thought I was, and she has a lot of exclamation points. And I just want to reflect on that all of us are more fearful than we think we are. And it's like this ultimate honesty practice. It's like, wow, all this is going on, and I couldn't see it before. It's like real life, you know, cranked up to 11. So then she continued to write, now I'm doing an anxiety practice. Do you have suggestions for that? Anxiety is another word for fear. Very specifically, anxiety is recirculating fear. Even more specifically, anxiety is fear locked in the basement that has been undealt with that's recirculating. And, you know, there is a voice of anxiety, but I think that if we didn't have a repressive approach to fear in our culture, then the voice of anxiety wouldn't exist. You know, it would just be fears on, fears off, you know. So we've all done the voice of fear before. Actually, let's just do this really quickly. Glenda, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so it's your turn to be in the hot seat. So allow me very quickly, we'll just do this voice first just to see the difference between the two. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of fear.
Okay. So just notice what it feels like to be you. And just tell me whatever you're aware of. How do you feel physically?
I feel, like, hypersensitive. I feel awake. Like, all of a sudden my body... It's responding to something. It doesn't even know where it is. It's just like I start getting like hot. My palms are getting hot, and it feels like I'm ready for something.
Okay. And I can hear Glenda in there a little bit. You know, I'm preparing her for something. You know, I'm in her body. And so like you are saying, my body. So fear, you
okay.
live in the body, and in many ways it is your body, right? That's your home.
Right.
So just, you notice how you feel. And there's also the whole conversation we can have about whether you're in the basement or not, you know. But I want to keep this as simple as possible. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of anxiety. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of anxiety.
How are you different from fear? How do you feel different?
I am way more what's the word? Like, I need answers quick. Like, I need things to happen now.
Like panic,
whether
like
fear. Yes, Yes, fear is a little different that way, and anxiety is. I am more like
desperate. Immediate. You need immediate attention.
Yes, right. Yeah, it's now.
Are you a more familiar feeling for Glenda than fear, or is fear more familiar?
She wasn't so familiar with fear. She was more familiar with me because I require a lot of attention in a very short period of time, and I drive her insane. And, yeah, so I think that she's more scared of me than fear.
Is your intention to drive her insane?
I don't know. I'm not sure. No, I don't think so. No.
I see it. Your intention is to get her attention.
Yeah.
Right? I see you as fear that's starting to be desperate and panicked and, like, demanding immediate attention. And,
right.
You know, like, she cannot not pay attention to you.
That's true. Yes.
Okay. Okay. So she wants to have an anxiety practice. So as the voice of anxiety, what do you recommend she do?
Well, actually, she did something right this week, which was write down all of her fears, everything, even the stuff that seemed really embarrassing, the stuff that was annoying, the stuff that she did not want to recognize, like everything. She just allowed herself to let it all out. And I feel that I was able to show myself a little bit more of a clean emotion to her, less harmful. So she was able to accept me for the first time.
Right.
Even though it was very scary for her.
Right. And listen to the word you just said, accept. So there's resist, that's level one. Accept is level two. Feel is level three. Intimate with is level four. And so she's taking steps in the right direction, but there's still some more steps that she can take. So that was one way to honor you, consider you, but she's still doing it as a way to get you to shut up, right? Like, what's your wisdom? Why are you trying to get her attention? What is she not dealing with? What's your message?
She needs to take care of herself.
And what does that look like?
I don't think she really understands that yet, quite a bit. Like, she's trying really hard, but I'm not sure if she totally understands what it really means to take care of herself.
But you need her to figure this out, and you need to she needs to figure it out quick, according to you. Like, you are jumping up and down, doing backflips, and
yeah.
Writing down all her fears is definitely a nice first step. Feeling you, being intimate with you. I think that in the four-step art of fear method, there's a bonus step. And the bonus step is, why is this voice trying to get my attention? Can I feel the energy of it? And what is it trying to say to me? And so, you know, you just answered that question for her. She needs to take better care of herself. And it's up to her to then figure out what that looks like. But it is mandatory. It's a priority. And so in many ways, having an anxiety practice is just listening to what the fear showing up as an anxiety is now desperate to get your attention for. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like taking action steps. Something needs to happen. Something needs to change. You know, a decision needs to be made. And then if you dissipate from making that decision, then it was the right decision. But if you still persist, it was the wrong decision, it's time to make a different decision. It's like you will make a change in your life. Like, that's kind of, you need to make a change in your life. And this kind of ties into the next version of the question. Do you have anything else as a voice of anxiety that you want to say to Glenda?
Well, she did something right this week, which I feel that she relates me to other people, but she actually separated me and fear, or maybe I can say this as another voice, I don't know.
Are you dramatically different from fear, or are you just kind of jumping up and down, kind of somewhat desperate for attention fear?
Yeah, it's just desperate for attention, yeah.
Okay. Let's move on. Allow me please to speak to the voice of Glenda. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of Glenda.
What did you get out of that?
That was really good. I think that I am in the right track, and as far as taking care of myself, I feel like that is my long lesson. I think it's going to take time, because it's part of my new life. So I just need to keep doing this practice, right? Keep letting myself be guided by this wisdom.
Yeah, and a problem is also a decision that's not yet been made. You know, like I said, make a decision. See if it works out. Okay, that didn't work out. Then make another decision. And I think that you're making good decisions. I think that you're listening to your anxiety and AKA fear. And that's the most important thing. Now, the last part of your question, though, ties in very nicely. Is it okay to try to look for the good feelings? And everybody really pay attention to this question because this is an important one. Is it okay to search for gratitude, for example? Because sometimes it feels fake to talk about gratitude when all I feel is anger, as an example. But there are other times when I know I could be thankful and I don't necessarily feel it, but I know I could tap into it, I guess. So I have been trained in Eastern Zen. And if I was speaking from a place of Eastern Zen, the answer would be no. Don't look for good feelings. Just be happy with what you got, right? Just wait and see what shows up next, and can you be grateful for that? And even that, we're kind of delving into Western Zen. Eastern Zen, there are no goals. You don't get into Zen in order to feel better. You know, there's a saying in Zen, Zen is good for nothing. And we talked about this, I believe, on our first call. Western Zen, which is kind of more what I subscribe to, which adds in Western philosophy, which adds in Western kind of new agey, like choose your reality. I think that there's some merit to that. And, you know, Jaquetta's probably throwing up in her mouth a little bit right now because she's never heard me say this before. But, you know, the hippies are kind of onto something, you know. So I would say yes, but within reason. I think the reason why this is a Western phenomenon is because we have it so good here in the West, in America. Like, you know, yes, there's suffering everywhere. There's suffering in Baghdad. There's suffering in Beirut. There's suffering in Beverly Hills, right? And we're starting to feel a little guilty about that. Like, oh, my gosh, you know, how could I be miserable when I have so much compared to what other people have to deal with? And so I think that's why the gratitude has come in, and forgiveness, and just trying to find the joy in life. And I think that it is something that we as Americans, it's probably a nice practice, but there's a big giant but to this. You know, if you don't do the see it and honor it part of the equation, and you just kind of try to jump to gratitude, it's just more repression. It's just more, like, for the you Seinfeld fans, serenity now. You know, it's just a joke that there's a reason why people roll their eyes around New Age stuff, because they're missing a couple steps. And so we want to take the best of Eastern Zen and we want to finish it off with the best of Western Zen. And what that looks like is my analogy, Shift, you know, or the game that I play, Shift. I actually have turned it into an acronym, and it makes me sick to my stomach to even mention acronyms because they're so cheesy, but it worked out so perfectly, right? I have to teach it. The S in Shift is see it. You know, oh, I've been repressing fear and it's now showing up as anxiety, and it's bigger than I think and it's trying to get my attention. Like, see all of that. H is honor it. Can I merge with it? Can I feel it? Can I feel my pain? Can I become intimate with my pain? The S and the H in my acronym is pure Eastern Zen, and it stops there. See it, honor it, see it, honor it, see it, honor it, full stop. The second we get into Western Zen, you tip over the edge, identify whether it's a big enough problem, I'm willing to do something about this, and then the F is figure out what I want to replace it with, T is take action. So if you all want to, moving forward from these support calls, want to enhance your practice past the four steps, past the Art of Fear method and the bonus step, if you have the time, you know, please take an extra minute. And after you're done, just fully feeling whatever it is that's showing up and honoring it that way, then you could spend the last minute in a gratitude practice, or you can shift into any voice that you want now that you have this tool at your fingertips. So that voice that you shift into can be gratitude. That's a nice one. But it's kind of a small voice, believe it or not. There's a story about a monk and a master, and the master said to the monk, you know, put a tablespoon of salt into a glass, stir it up, take a sip. And the monk was like, oh my God, this is putrid, I can't drink it. And then the master took him to a lake and said, okay, put a tablespoon of salt into the lake, stir it up, now take a drink. And it was more tolerable. Like, we want to really try to expand who we are. If we see the salt as pain, as anxiety, as fear, you know, if you're small, if you're in a small container, which is in our ego, of course, we're small selves. Another name for ego is small self. Those unpleasant feelings are going to be barely tolerable. But if you expand who you are in this Western Zen kind of final minute, after you see it and honor it through the four-step process, you know, pick a really big voice. Gratitude is a big voice. I would say it's medium big. But there are much bigger voices, like the voice of infinite gratitude or the voice of the infinite itself. The voice of big mind, you know, instead of small mind, but big mind. Like, I am the mind of all creatures. Like, I am the mind of the people that are suffering in Beirut and Baghdad. Big heart is another big voice. So you have gratitude for your own life, but you have, you know, just gratitude for life itself, gratitude for the earth, for the plants, for the stars, and loving your heart for that. Can you think of maybe a couple of other voices that you can shift into, Glenda?
I loved everything you just said, and I think that's exactly what that was my question. I grew up extremely repressed. 100% repressed. And so I want to explore those huge voices. And when you say these, I feel like, oh my word, this is going to be the best part of the practice. And I don't know if it's, I don't want to, you know, start these that will turn it into ego later. I don't want that because I've already experienced, you know, some intimacy anyway with fear and pain and all of that. But it's equally big. It's just that I've been on the side of depression and all those feelings, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, like, I haven't even explored this other side. Like, when I hear, you know, infinite gratitude and all of this, and I'm thinking, like, ecstasy. I'm thinking, I don't know, something that feels expansive. And so it's like all of a sudden the picture is different. And I love what you said about the ego being small. So, of course, we're going to drown feeling our feelings through the ego. But it's amazing. It's actually beautiful if we feel them through who we really are. So that was amazing.
Well, our ego is our birthright. I do not subscribe to trying to get rid of the ego. Not only is it impossible, but it's undesirable. Because next thing you know, you're not you anymore, right? So we want to honor the ego. Like, we're here to have an egoic experience. You know, there's two possibilities. You know, are we human beings looking to have a spiritual experience, or are we spiritual beings looking to have a human experience? I believe it's the second one. We're spiritual beings looking to have a human experience. I mean, we have to get in touch with what we truly are, where we came from. But right here on Earth, in this body, you know, in this skin encapsulated ego, like, we have to be what we are. We have to have our human experience. And guess what? It involves pain, involves fear, involves suffering, resistance, all of it. You know, so we have to spend some time first being fully human before we can get to beingness. You know, before we can kind of go back to being the whole, we have to first be an individual. And so, you know, hippies, great, like, New Age movement, great, but they're just trying to get rid of the ego. They're not honoring our human nature. And so, just to reiterate so that there's no misunderstanding, first steps have to be see it and honor it. First steps have to be that four-step method. And then shift into something else at the end. Add that onto your practice. If it feels authentic, you know, the rest of your question is, when we've explored a lot of the painful emotions, how do you deal with the happy emotions? Do you search for them, or do you just let them come? And that's kind of the meat of your question. Do you search for them, or do you just let them come? And I wrote search for them. I have notes here. If you're desperate enough, sure. But if you find it to be inauthentic, do not do it. You know, can you just have gratitude for your pain? Can you find a way to be comfortable with being uncomfortable? Really make sure that that's your practice. And if it feels like it wants to happen next, if it feels authentic, then bring it on.
Okay, do you feel that there's more profoundness in when we deal with the emotion that's arising, that we were going to find way more answers and profoundness than if we go and search for a voice? So even if it's uncomfortable, the voice that's arising is the one that's actually going to take us deeper.
I think the voice that's arriving is the one that's going to take us deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times, though, when it's really important to change. Like right now, I need to make a change in my personality. And I think that it's very hard to do. It's very rare that it becomes important enough to do it. And I need to do it. And I need to cultivate and give a promotion to other voices that are underdeveloped within me. And they're kind of what wants to happen next anyway, but I'm just in a habitual pattern. And so I see this as a form of cultivation, like growing a garden. You know, but it can't be done without the first bit. And it's very rare. I mean, this is perhaps the only time in my life that I'll ever do this, that I'll ever go that extra step. And so I don't recommend this often, but it's, you know, it's coming up for me. So to answer your question, no, it's a deeper process, especially if fear is jumping up and down, desperately trying to get your attention to go all the way with that before you try to then gloss it over. And if you don't have the skills to deal with that authentically, it could inadvertently wind up being more repression. So just be very careful and selective of when you actually do this. Only if it feels like it wants to happen next.
Okay.
Or needs to happen next.
Okay.
I would say we're going to go over to... Go ahead.
One last question. So in the acronym, I missed the F, and I was writing it down. So it's
I'll send it out.
Okay.
I'll send it out to the group afterwards. Okay. I don't teach it really
Thank you
often.
Very much.
Okay. Obviously, we're going to go over, but we only have a question that was submitted by Peter left. So, Peter, be on board here. Since I'm the Bardo and trying to hang in there, I'm wondering if you would recommend business as usual when it comes to how I'm showing up at work or running my business now that my commitment to sticking with it indefinitely has let go. So I need some clarifying questions. Now that my commitment to sticking with it, what is it? Are you sticking with the Bardo or are you sticking with work?
The business. So that commitment has just sort of eroded. So I'm having a hard time showing up the way I have for the last 17 years.
Okay. Then you wrote, I'm feeling a lot of pull to make some changes that feel a bit rash. What kind of rash changes are drawing you?
Trying to figure out how to respond to people who are, innocently coming to me for a service that they expect, like they've had in the past or whatever, and just not wanting to sort of pretend that I'm going to be here doing this in 5 years or 10 years, and I don't know. I just feel like I'm lurching around, not knowing what to do, since the way I tend to make decisions is usually there's kind of a long period of rumination, and then I just want to once there's a decision, I want to just really take action, and so I'm aware that I'm still in that uncertain period, and it's just kind of hard to keep marching along doing what sort of feels like it's expected of me. So I want to handle this gracefully. I just don't want to make a big mess, but I also have been sort of repressing, a lot of what's coming out for a long time just to get, this far along in doing this type of work in this way. So I hope that made sense.
It makes more sense than you realize. So I spent 15 years building my career as a professional athlete, and I didn't even have to ski anymore. I was a writer. I was hosting television shows. I was fully sponsored, didn't have to ski anymore if I didn't want to. And I went to Burning Man, and I came back, and 5 days later, I'm like, I cannot spend another moment, in this business. I need to go. And I wrote a letter, 20 minutes took me, and I sent it to everybody. I quit everything. I walked away. And I was like, I'd spent 15 years becoming wildly successful. And to walk away from it all freaked out my family, my friends. My boyfriend was like practically having a panic attack. It's because I just couldn't do it anymore. And so I understand.
Fun little recent bit of news from that. There was a 10-year NFL veteran who retired yesterday at halftime.
During the game.
No one knew it was coming. Like, in the middle of the game, retired from football.
Okay. Well, people are waking up to their truth, apparently, in a very brilliant way. So, The other thing that's going on is I'm really experimenting with really being very truthful with people. Like I'm in a practice right now where if somebody comes to me and says, "Can you give me some?" Here's an example. Can we get together for coffee? I'll instead of making some excuse, I'll say, "No, I'm really really busy and I'm not looking for more friends right now. I'm sorry." I'll tell the truth. I'm just being really, really honest because I'm so anti-ghosting that, it's like if I could just not respond or I could just make some other excuse like, oh, I'm really busy. And, you know, it's just disrespectful to that person that's trying to, you know, get something from you. You know,
yeah.
I don't know if you can start a practice where you respond authentically. Like, the old me would answer your question, you know, and spend a bunch of time with you right now, but I'm in such resistance to this question right now. I'm going to have to respectfully decline and hope that you find an answer somewhere else. Or, you know, like, can you speak the truth?
Yeah, it's always been what I want to do, and part of why I've really struggled is, like, I'm just not good at pretending, and so if I've sort of judged that the truth isn't going to be acceptable or it's not going to be very smart for the business or whatever, then I really get kind of stuck.
Well, let's look back up a little bit and look at the big picture.
Yeah.
You know, the question is, should I stick with it? You know, you have a business for almost 2 decades. And the answer is it depends. Like, if we're talking about having a kid and it's like I'm over being a parent, you know, yeah, you kind of have to stick with it, right? Because we can't pretend that your changes and choices don't affect other people. You know, so if you make a commitment to raising this child, yes, you do have to stick with it. If you have made a commitment to your business and a lot of people are depending on your staying in your career to continue their career, the answer is maybe. You know, I don't know the circumstances. You know the circumstances, and you probably know the answer to this question. Maybe the best thing that you could possibly do is to end the business, and I don't know how many employees there are. Maybe there's 50 employees that rely on you to make a living. Maybe one of them is 70 years old and doesn't have any other skill sets. I mean, there's those things that you all have to factor in. But I will say that I knew about this woman who had a basement apartment, and she rented it to this kid, and he moved in, he had a job, he had a girlfriend, and he lived there for like 10 years, and over time, he lost his job, he lost his girlfriend, and he gained like 100 pounds, and he was just super depressed, and the only thing that he had was a solid, stable place to live that he loved living there, and the woman got to the point where she really wanted to remodel her house. And in order to do the remodel, she wanted to kind of commandeer the basement, and she would have to kick this poor kid out who had nothing but his apartment. And she just put it off and put it off for his sake. Finally, she said, okay, gently, you have to move. And then he was gone. And she ran into him a year later. He'd lost 100 pounds. He had a new job. He had a new girlfriend. Like, sometimes that apartment can be the crutch that holds people back from the next phase of what wants to happen in their life. So factor that in. There's like a lot of factors that you want to take into consideration. And this being a fear support package, here's my question for you. So if you were to just like go all the way and just like rip the Band-Aid off, do what I did, write the letter, I'm done, you know, walk off during halftime, like if you were to do that and all that implies and what that means to the people in your life and all that, on a scale of 1 to 10, how scary is that for you to do?
About a 9.5.
9.5, okay. So if you were to stay and be there still 10 years from now, still stuck in the same place, even more like sick of it, you know, how strong is that fear from 1 to 10?
That doesn't feel as scary. It just feels more sort of dark and like I might just be dead. I don't know. Like, it's really a depressing vision.
Okay. So try those two feelings on. You know, what it's going to feel like if you leave and what it's going to feel like if you stay, and which feels more upsetting to you?
Staying feels more upsetting. It's, a lot less alive.
Okay. So then the question is, how can you exit gracefully?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And you started this off by talking about the Bardo. It's like you're kind of, I can sense that you're more willing to be in the Bardo. You might not even have any clue what you want to do next.
Yeah, I'm working on that, but it's pretty vague.
Right. But it's like you have to totally give this up before you can become what you want to be next. You know, you have to have that empty space. You know, when I quit my ski career, my boyfriend that I told you was having a panic attack, he said with his high-pitched voice, "So that's it? You're done? You're just done with your life? And you're never going to do anything ever again? Like, that's it? You're just quitting?" I'm like, you know, and now look what I'm doing with my life. Like, this is way better than being a professional athlete, right? But there are consequences. So anyway, there's fear if you stay, there's fear if you go. There's pain if you stay, there's pain if you go. There's discomfort if you stay, there's discomfort if you go. Weigh all those options. And how you exit is very important. You know, can you have those honest conversations when somebody comes up wanting something from you? Can you just say, you know, I just can't do it right now. You know, can you get out before you piss a bunch of people off?
Right.
Can you be authentic in a mature way? So let's just do a quick voice. What is it, how are you currently dealing with people that are coming up to you that are asking for you to do something that you don't feel like doing? How are you reacting? How are you feeling in those moments?
Kind of tightening up and just like avoiding, feeling forced. And then, you know, of course, when I stop dealing with people and then more come in, then I add sort of guilt and some anxiety to the mix of, like, from getting sort of farther behind and having a bigger pile of undealt with people. So
it sounds like resistance.
Yeah.
And the guilt is there for a reason. It's like, hey, you're screwing this up. Knock it off. You know, you should feel guilty. So allow me, please, and every single voice, all 10,000 voices, have so many different versions of them. There's masculine and there's feminine. There's in the basement. There's owned and honored. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of immature resistance. Who am I speaking to?
Immature resistance.
How do you react and speak? Walk and talk.
I don't wanna.
Back off.
Wait, leave me alone.
You're right. Okay. Now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of mature resistance. And I'm doing this because resistance gets a really bad rap with me, you know. I want to honor resistance. There's different variations of it. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of mature resistance. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of mature resistance.
How do you speak? How do you walk and talk?
I'm kind of like the emergency brake. Like, I'm just going to slow things down because you don't want to just charge off the cliff, and so I'm just gonna put my brake on until you're thinking more clearly, and then I can stop slowing you down so much.
And when you say you and your, you mean Peter?
I'm talking,
right?
Yeah.
Right. Like, hey, Peter, slow down. Just, you know, take a moment. Just pause before you respond. Pause before you act. Okay. And even if you then, as the voice of resistance, are the one to speak, I would say something like, I'm sorry, I'm not available for this right now. And I'll get back to you when I am. So big difference in language. One is very immature, very childlike. And here's the thing. I kind of tricked you guys. Any voice that's in the basement is going to come up in an immature way. any voice that's owned and honored is going to show up in a mature way. So the voice of immature resistance is resistance in the basement, you know, don't want to deal with it. But if you own and honor your resistance, like your resistance is here for a reason. It's here to make you sharp and smart, and it's a very noble voice if it's owned and honored. And it's important for Peter to pay attention to this voice, to you. But can we own and honor it, and then it shows up in a mature and healthy way? Not only does he then not have to deal with guilt, but he gets to feel kind of like a sage, like the Buddha, as he plans and executes his exit from this business.
Yeah.
So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I feel like
is there anybody? Go ahead.
Oh, just right in that spot that, like, I can just feel the pressure, but it's different when I'm not trying to run away from it as much.
There's also running away from resistance. Like we try to control, the controller tries to control itself. Fear is afraid of itself. Resistance is resisting itself. Like we have all sorts of craziness going on with these voices. And if we can just have them show up and organically be the 10,000 wisdoms, the 10,000 motivators, the 10,000 opportunities to bring your A game to every moment, you know, things change and they change fast. And there's integrity. It's like, I came up with this equation. I don't share it very often, but integrity equals whatever voice it is that's showing up in your hose plus a drop of grace.
Yeah.
You know, that's integrity. Is it integrity to just like drop everything and just help this person when you're not in the mood for it? No. You know, integrity is to honor the fact that you're not available right now and being able to express that gracefully so that this person doesn't feel rejected or hurt by how you treat them. So, and the grace really comes from honoring it. See it, honor it. See it, and then drop of grace is the honoring it. So we're coming to a close. Does anybody have anything else that they want to say about what we've just explored? Anything we've explored, in fact. Or any other questions that we're dying to add to our buffet here?
I have a question, Kristen. It's Glenda. Would there be any way to have like a list of voices? I feel like there's so many voices, and every time you come up with one, I'm like, wow, I never thought about that one. So, yeah, it just came to me that.
Well,
I wonder.
I don't have a list of voices. I'm gonna give you guys a real gift. Nobody's ever asked me that before, and I don't have a list of voices, but what I do have is a list of voices that I've just all of a sudden like struck me, and I wrote them down. I don't know how long it is. It's like not all in the same font. It's just a bunch of gibberish, and it's just single words. I'll send it to you. I'm not shy, right?
That'll be awesome. There's some, thank you.
Yeah, there's some really good ones in there, and probably 90% of them I haven't facilitated yet. But every once in a while, I'll go to that list and I'll just pull one out and I'll be like, oh, it's time, you know. So these are the ones that have just like slapped me upside the face. But I'll send you that list, but don't expect to understand it. There's no notes in there. Like I said, it's all in different fonts. There's no linear order to them. It's just a hodgepodge of just for my eyes only, but I will send it to you.
Okay.
And I'm also going to send you I'm also going to send you the acronym as promised. So you're going to get two things. Any other questions? And then I'll finish with the story.
Not so much a question, but I just a comment that I found the idea of the big voices to be something that I felt cut off from. I feel that they're in me. I never let them speak. So that was very illuminating. So thank you.
And in this list, you're going to see a lot of them. And, you know, sometimes during ski camps, we'll get to the end of a 3-day or 4-day camp, and I'm like, okay, sky's the limit. You can ski in any voice you want to. And what do people pick? They pick, like, joy or love. I'm like, oh, God, it's just small time. Really. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the voices that we now have access to through this dialogue are just profound. So I'm glad that you brought that up and, you know, watch for those in the list and watch for those in yourself, like anything at all. One of my favorite voices to ski in is the sexy rock star Sparkle Pony, for example. But anyway, that's a very egotistical voices. But you could literally put the word cosmic on the front of any voice, like cosmic joy. And notice how much bigger that is. You know, cosmic love, or universal love, or infinite love. And just notice how much that expands, you know, it from a small kind of just me and my own love to all the love that has ever existed in the history of the world from start to finish, you know, even beyond the human experience. Like, it just gets really fascinating. You know, you have an experience of these voices more and more and more. Next thing you know, you're not that small glass of water with the salt in it. You're the big lake with the salt in it. And the fear and the pain is nothing anymore.
Mm.
So I want to finish with a story. And I don't tell this story very often. There was a village of creatures laying along the bottom of this mighty river. And the current of the river swept over them. You know, and they're all different. Some were young, some were old, some were rich, some were poor. Some were cruel, mean, you know, creatures. Some were compassionate. But each creature in its own way just clung really tightly to the bottom of the river because clinging was just kind of their way of life. And resisting the current is what they'd all learned since they were young, since the moment of their birth, practically. So one day, one of the creatures said, I can't take it anymore. I'm tired of clinging. I have no idea what's downriver, but I trust the current that it knows where it's going, and I'm going to let go. I'll just let it take me wherever it's going to take me, because if I stay clinging, I swear to God, I'm going to die of boredom, right? And the other creatures kind of laughed at him and said, you're a fool. Like, if you let go, that current is just going to smash you across the rocks. You'll die faster than the boredom even will kill you. But he did it anyway. And as you can tell, Peter, this story is inspired by you. Did it anyway. And he took a breath, and he let go. And immediately he was smashed by the current across the rocks, right? Huge disaster. But he slowly recovered. And he got to the point where, again, okay, I can't take it anymore. I refuse to cling anymore. And so he left the rocks, and the current lifted him up this time from the bottom, and then he was just gone. Now, as he floated downriver, there were other creatures downstream, and he was a stranger to them. And they saw him go by, and they screamed out, like, oh, my gosh, what are you doing? Did you see that? And they said to each other, it's a miracle. That was just a creature just like us, but he flies. He's the Messiah. He's come to save us all. And as he's kind of going by these creatures, he heard them say this. And before he flew out of range, he said, I'm not a Messiah. The river wants to lift us all free. We just need to let go to what we're clinging to, what we're supposed to do, and go on this voyage, this adventure. Can't you see? But that's all he could get out, and then he was gone. And as these creatures stayed there, and they're still clinging to the rocks, and they were left alone again, almost immediately, they began speaking about and making legends of a savior that they once saw. So we're all clinging to habitual patterns. We're clinging to avoidance. We're clinging to resistance. You know, there's this flow of the world, of our natural state in us. It's like it's flowing into, through, and out of us all. And we're taught to cling. We're in the habitual pattern of clinging. And every once in a while, somebody lets go, and somebody just kind of goes with it. And I don't want to get too caught up on let go, because that's a word that I, you know, I poo-poo. It's like, it's not so much let go of fear and let go of anger, but just kind of let go of clinging, let go of resistance, and just, like, let your life unfold. Let it take you where it wants to go. Pay attention to the 10,000 voices. Be in flow with all of them. And you'll become a messiah as well. So with that, I put my hands together. I bow to you. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me today. Let me know if you want to work with me privately. Yes, Jason, sign up for the PTSD course. It's the best thing I've ever created. I'm really proud of it. Reach out to me if you have any more questions. I will always write back. If I don't write back, I didn't get your email. And thank you for doing this work. Because not only does it make a difference in your life, it makes a difference in my life. And we cannot even begin to measure the difference that it makes in all of us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you
so much, Kristen.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye, you guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
See you downriver. Bye.